Before we start our episode today, I want to talk a little bit about a hard topic, fertility. If you are one of the many women struggling to become pregnant again, just know that we're thinking of you and sending you the most positive thoughts. For mamas trying to conceive or struggling with fertility, I encourage you to check out Needed. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer egg quality support for women and sperm plus for men. These are things that are not often talked about. I wanted to share more about both of those products. Needed's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on egg quality, but for optimal results, they recommend taking egg support at least 3 months before trying to conceive or freezing the eggs. For Needed Sperm Support Plus, it combines targeted and clinically studied ingredients, pre and probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for the whole body approach to male fertility. Expertly formulated for men who are thinking of trying to conceive and for men's vitality at stages of all life. If you are pregnant or trying to conceive, or even in your postpartum stages, consider switching to Needed to get 20% off your order by using code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20 at checkout. Hello, everybody. You guys, today is a very exciting day. We have recently had two of our VBAC team members have their babies. Paige was one with the first maternal assisted cesarean in Korea. And today is the second with Lily. Oh my gosh. If you guys have been on our social media, you have seen our cute Lily. She is just so amazing. She's so fun. She's in the DMs on Instagram literally every day chatting with you. Just absolutely adore her. She's so incredible. Lily is a born and raised Colorado. I don't even know how to actually say this. Lily is a born and raised Coloradoan. I think is how you say it. She's from Colorado. Living in Northern Colorado with her husband, son, and daughter. She is a kinesiologist who works in community health and a dual certified fitness instructor, passionate about movement and wellness. After an unexpected cesarean 2.5 years ago, Lily found the VBAC link and began planning her VBAC and is excited to share her story today. And I cannot wait for you to hear it. This was actually the first time that I got to hear it in its entirety. Oh, it's just amazing, and I'm excited for you to hear it. Like I mentioned, Lily is also our social media assistant at the VBAC Link and is truly honored to empower and hold space for all the women of strength in our community. You guys, she is absolutely amazing. We love her so, 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 so much. And we do have a review that we're going to share, and then we are going to turn the time over to our sweet Lily to share her stories. This review is by Savannah. And it says, started listening to the VBAC Link podcast around 16 weeks pregnant and continued throughout my pregnancy. It was so good and encouraging for me as a mama who was preparing for a VBAC. It helped gain confidence, helped me know what to look for and watch out for in my providers. Hearing others' stories were so encouraging and helped me gain so much knowledge. I had my hospital VBAC unmedicated with an 8-pound, 15-ounce baby, and I know the knowledge I gained from this podcast played a huge role in being able to advocate for myself and get a better birth outcome. Congratulations, Savannah. And we're going to talk a little bit about this today as well with Lily on the podcast, how, you know, sometimes the thought of going to the hospital is like scary because of maybe stories you've heard or things you've heard, but VBAC can happen in the hospital, and it can be beautiful, and it is beautiful. And I think it always dials back to me to finding the best provider for you, finding the best location that feels right for you, building your team, and doing what is best for you in the end. So I really am so excited, you guys, to just 1 minute after the intro to turn the time over to Lily.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and feedback educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Miss Lily, I'm really so excited because I was even texting you the day you were in labor and don't really know all the details, but I've seen your incredible pictures. Oh my goodness, your pictures are so incredible. And I've heard a little bit from you, so I really can't wait. So let's talk about these births.
Okay. Yeah. So every cesarean story is what starts us off. So I will go with that, but I'm going to try to be fast because I feel like my birth was really long. So I have a lot more to say about my VBAC. But I always try to really honor our story in that before we had our beautiful, amazing rainbow baby boy, we also experienced a miscarriage and an ectopic pregnancy prior to having our son. So I lost my right fallopian tube. And I always like to be the encourager that you can get pregnant naturally with one fallopian tube. Turns out fallopian tubes are not fixed body parts. So when we got pregnant with our son, I ovulated from the side. I don't have a fallopian tube on. And my other tube was able to come over and grab the egg and sense the ovulation, which feels so miraculous.
So incredible. So incredible. And I love that message that you're dropping for our community, because I think if someone was in that situation, as you know, like it could feel very defeating and uncertain.
Yeah, it feels really scary. I remember thinking like I'm at less than 50% fertility if I've lost one tube, but that's not true. Statistically, it's really pretty equal to people with both fallopian tubes, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started acupuncture. So my sweet friend Montana, we had been friends for years and she's always been like, you should come see me. She specializes in women's health and fertility and loss and all the things. So I started acupuncture then. And I say that now because it kind of has continued. I always say I'll never not be a patient of hers ever again because she's the best. So I started to do that. And then we got pregnant. We found out we were pregnant on the last day of week of prayer at our church, which was really incredible. It just felt like such a tangible miracle. And we chose to go with a birth center for our care. And we did that because I had a lot of hospital trauma. I just didn't think that a hospital was a safe place for me to have my baby. And I'm a big believer that we should birth wherever feels the safest. So we went for birth center care and had a great experience at our birth center. Loved our midwives, was really excited for birth. And I think I hear so many times as women tell their VBAC stories that often we feel underprepared going into our first birth and it leads to a cascade. I think I was the birthiest nerd of all. And I feel like I was really prepared going into birth. I was excited for it. I had a lot of birth education. I had been a birth podcast listener forever and ever. And I just felt really empowered in birth and all the things. I was doing chiropractic care and acupuncture and all the stuff. So we did get to 41 weeks. And at my 41-week appointment, my midwives gave me a 3-page long induction protocol, because in our state, we have to transfer at 42 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it was there like, this is the last ditch effort when you are 41 and I can't remember how many days. We want you to do this big thing. And it was like a daily schedule. You're going to wake up and you're going to go for a drive on a bumpy road and you're going to eat this and you're going to do this. And it was really overwhelming.
Yeah.
So the night before we were supposed to do that protocol, the doula that was on call at the center was texting me and was like, hey, how you feeling? And I was like, I don't know. I feel really nervous to do this big long thing. And she suggested that I journal out all of my fears about birth and see if that did anything. So I journaled all my fears and I burned it in our kitchen sink. And as I walked up the stairs, I had my first contraction. So also a huge believer that our emotions play such a huge role in our labors. So I was really stoked that my labor started and all the things. And that's the same doula that we had for our next birth too, which is really cool. So yeah, I labored all of that night. It was Friday that I went into labor that evening. Saturday, I labored. My midwives came and checked in eventually. My doula did come over, did some stuff with me, kind of hung out and helped me labor, did some homeopathy, some emotional release work, all the good stuff. But my labor was really, really long. And so by Sunday, my midwives were like, hey, you are super exhausted. We want you to take a Benadryl and try to take a nap. And I am a girly who does not take a lot of medicine. So this Benadryl knocked me on my booty and I had 6 really awful contractions trying to take a nap. And after I got back up from the nap, I got back on the toilet, which is where I was loving to labor. And I stood up because I was like, okay, maybe things are starting. I'm finally getting a pattern. Maybe I can finally go to the birth center. And I stood up and I checked the pad I was wearing and there was a copious amount of meconium, like not water, meconium, which is scary, you know? Yeah. And I knew right then that I was going to have to transfer because that's
and it was thick.
Like it was poop.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was no water stained. It was just meconium. And so I call my midwife and in her sweet midwife voice, I said, do I have to transfer? And she goes, it's definitely a conversation we have to have. And I was like, oh, okay, so yes. Mm-hmm. And she explained that because of the way the meconium came out, she now thought my son was breech because his butt was right up against my cervix and it just came right out. And so she came over. Actually, she wasn't even on call. She happened to live in our neighborhood. And she came over and checked me and all the things. And she's like, yep, this feels really different than a few hours ago. He's definitely breech. We do have to transfer. And so as we're transferring, in my mind, I know that we're probably going to have a cesarean. And my midwives were really great in that they called ahead and they were like, hey, we called ahead. No one's willing to do a vaginal breech delivery, or at least they're not trained in it. But my midwives were also really encouraging that, like, if this is something you want to do, you have a right to deny a surgery. You mm-hmm. have that right. We will be here in support of that. They don't have hospital privileges. They were out of hospital midwives. So they had to transfer me and they could go with me and essentially be that emotional support. But we were still kind of in COVID times. So I had to also choose who I wanted to be in there with me. This was 2022. And so I just felt so defeated. I was so mad that I wasn't going to get the birth that I wanted. I started screaming through contractions. Can confirm that does make it worse. And I was just pissed. And so I opted for a cesarean. And it was really tough. I remember as we were leaving my house, asking my midwives, like, I can have a VBAC at the birth center, right? Like, you can do VBACs. And they were like, yep, but let's get this baby out first. So I transferred. I had my cesarean. I think it went as smoothly as it could go. I remember there was a sweet tech who I was just in a lot of pain. And she just gave me the biggest hug as they put my spinal in and was like stroking my back saying, this is the last one. This is the last one. You can do this. And it was like, okay. So there was like some tenderness there. But post that was a lot of grief. And I think we've all experienced that. And a lot of heart. I never saw the surgeon that did my surgery ever again. None of my follow-ups were with her. It was just some random OB. I was so thankful that I had been at the birth center because I got all of their postpartum care. So I had a couple home visits and a lot of really tender care from my midwives, which was exactly what I needed. And then I found the VBAC link. And I remember finding it on a walk and just because I had listened to birth podcasts for years, like I said.
Yeah.
And suddenly it was like grievous to listen, you know, this thing that I loved hurt my feelings to listen to. It was like, oh gosh, I don't want to listen to the first time mom that had an amazing water birth and it was pain-free. Right. Like it just was grief. And so when I found the VBAC link, I was like, this is exactly what I needed. This is like stories of women that give me hope and not just that trigger jealousy, which I think is a very real and valid emotion.
Very, very real. Very real.
And it's okay and valid. To feel that way, you yeah. know? But I remember going for all of my postpartum walks and like listening to the VBAC link and crying through every episode and all of the things. And then just in that postpartum time, I got back into fitness. I have a background in kinesiology, teach a lot of fitness classes. So I got back to like community and in finding that. And then I also got to work here, which is so fun. A year ago in yeah. November, which is so cool. I think it's really a cute thing that my year anniversary was in November and that's when I had her. So like how cool that that's I spent so a year awesome. Empowering other women and also getting to plan my own, which was really fun. So yeah. So if you've ever DM'd us on Instagram, you're probably talking to me.
Yep. Yep. She's in there every day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the day because we get a lot of messages. We really do. Like,
and we want to answer all of them. Like, do. I want you to feel seen and known and mm-hmm. you know, all the things. So if you're getting an answer, you're getting a robot, not getting a robot.
You're absolutely not getting me
or Megan or Olga or Ashley, you're getting one of us, which is really neat.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break to continue talking about fertility. I know many of our beautiful women of strength listening join us right after their cesarean birth. And when you're in your postpartum stages, many of your nutrition needs actually increase. And if you're thinking about having another baby, I invite you to take a moment to educate yourself on the support that our favorite prenatal supplement Needed offers for both fertility and postpartum. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer eggs quality support for women and sperm support for men. Again, this is not something we often talk about. Male fertility impacts conception and a healthy pregnancy, and it is in decline due to stress, toxins, aging, and other lifestyle factors. Hormone and gut health of your partner directly influences sperm quantity and quality, and ultimately the DNA passed from sperm to baby. I love that Needed not only thinks about the female fertility, but also about the male fertility. Needed does an amazing job thinking about and supporting us women through the fertility journey. They offer prenatals, omega-3s, antioxidant, rich in egg quality support supplements, and it is formulated by prenatal health practitioners to help you and your eggs thrive. You are born with all of your egg cells, or oocytes. And the oocyte takes 3 to 4 months to mature before ovulation. Needed egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes, and it's never too early or too late to focus on egg quality. So we hope you can check out thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20. Again, that is VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Back to today's show.
Okay, so then we got pregnant again.
Yay.
Eventually. Yes. So we had planned to start trying when our son was 2. We got pregnant a couple months before his 2nd birthday. And again, such a redemptive moment of going from like having a really hard trying to conceive journey to like me, a girly with 1 fallopian tube, getting pregnant on accident. Are you kidding me? It's crazy. But it was so great. It was really scary at first. So we did have some early pregnancy bleeding. We thought we were having another miscarriage. And at the same time, my dad had his appendix rupture. So he was in the hospital septic while I'm like early pregnant, bleeding. Like it was just a hellstorm at first and felt really scary, but I knew that I was going for my VBAC and that was really grounding. So I won't share a ton of this journey. My midwife Paige and I were on the podcast earlier in 2024. So if you want to listen to that podcast about finding care, but I'll just quickly cover essentially the birth center that I was supposed to be at that I always dreamed would be my redemptive birth again was the same midwives. Matilda is grabbing my ears.
Also, the episode's 342, if you want to go back and listen.
Yes, for midwife stuff.
Yes.
So essentially my midwives were amazing and I love them, but the birth center just wasn't in our financial capability. They don't take insurance. And so this time around, it was just not something that we were able to do. So I started my care at the birth center, was really grateful to be there because they really knew my story. So kind of held me through the worry about miscarriage. And then we ended up having to navigate transferring care. So I interviewed another birth center that was in network with our insurance that was about an hour away. And I interviewed my midwife, Paige, and her practice partner, Jess. I told my husband when we went in to interview them, I was so terrified to like these hospital midwives and that I would have a hospital birth. And I did. I fell in love with them. And I think that's so important. One thing I get really frustrated with, I think, and especially in the more like crunchy birth community, is that we are often told that hospital birth can't be beautiful, that you can't have a physiological birth in a hospital.
Yep.
And I'm here to tell you that that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And you can. And we have to stop telling women that the place that they feel safest is less than in any way. If a hospital is where you end up, then that is incredible and amazing. And that's where you should birth if that's what feels right for you and your baby.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with like epidural versus non-epidural, or like it doesn't matter. You're not any less powerful or strong or amazing if you birth without an epidural versus an epidural, or out of the hospital versus the hospital, or a planned cesarean versus not going for a VBAC, or if it goes to a cesarean. Like, we have to start having more love for one another in our community. And even though it might,
like be something really great for one person and they believe that, and that's okay that they believe that. That doesn't mean it's right for that next person.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we navigated what hospital care was going to look like. At the time, our hospital was under construction. And so they were letting you labor in the tub, but you couldn't deliver in the tub at the time. Mm-hmm. And the tubs were home birth tubs that they were blowing up in the rooms and all these things. But by the end of my pregnancy, the low intervention rooms were open. They were supporting water birth, which I think is so neat to see from a hospital. So yeah, we were really excited. And this time I did more acupuncture. So I continued to see my amazing acupuncturist. She's amazing. Montana Glenn, if you ever need her in Northern Colorado. And I did switch chiropractors. Last time I went to just the chiropractor that I'd always gone to, but she wasn't Webster certified. And this time I did go see a Webster certified chiropractor, and Laura is amazing. And that really changed a lot of my pelvic pain and things like that. And I was way more active in this pregnancy. With my son, I was working at a bar studio, and the fitness studio closed about halfway through my pregnancy. And I kind of just, petered off the train of staying active. But with my daughter, we were able to, I say we, because she was there. I worked out until the day before I was in labor, and I teach spin, strength, and yoga. So it's a combo. It's called Spinga. And I was there all the time. I did stop on the spin bike at 34 weeks pregnant because I learned that that's not great for baby positioning, and it can shorten some of those ligaments. And so I stopped doing the spin bike at that point to be really cautious of position. And speaking of that, so had a standard kind of pregnancy, would talk with my midwife forever and ever. I came in with questions about my birth, probably day one. And she's like, girl, you're 16 weeks pregnant, chill. No, but I had questions, and I would come in every time, and I did feel like a first-time mom in that sense, because the last time I had a lot of expectations of, I knew what the birth center was going to look like, and I had no idea what a hospital labor was going to look like, how many nurses are going to be in my room, and who's going to be up in my space, and what does this look like, and how do I do intermittent monitoring, and all the things. And Paige was great about my midwife saying, hey, this is what the hospital protocol is. Hospital protocol is not a law. You get to do what you want to do, and we support you in that. And so she was awesome. At 32 weeks, though, Matilda was breech, which was really scary as a mama who had a surprise breech baby. And so I did all the things. And if you want to know all of those things, we have an Instagram live that is saved on our page of literally the kibosh of things that I did for flipping her. And we did flip her. I also saw a body worker in town and a doula who's amazing. Her name is Heather Stanley. And she's the breech lady here in Northern Colorado. And so did some body work and stuff with her, and worked through emotional stuff and birth stuff. And so it was, I think, really what I needed. And Heather said that in our session, and I kind of, rolled my eyes. She's like, I think sometimes babies go breech because we've got some stuff to process. And I think that I did. I thought I processed. I went to therapy after my cesarean. I did all the things, but I still had some stuff. And I think she was teaching me hey, let's work through this now.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same thing with Webster. He kept flipping breech, and I had never had a breech baby before, but I was like, if I have to have a C-section because you're breech, I've done all the things. And I was really frustrated, and we'd get him to flip and then he'd go back. And my midwife was like, we need to stop. And I believe that same thing. I needed to work through some things. He needed to be in those positions during the time, for whatever reason, we had to gain more trust in our bodies and our abilities and processing, right?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, so then she flipped and it was great. And then I just felt so seen by Paige in all of it, because she knew hey, when you get to the hospital, we'll check with an ultrasound, double check that she's still head down, because I know that's anxiety inducing for you. And I just felt so empowered with all of our decision-making. It felt like a big partnership. One thing that I struggled with my son was I was at home laboring for 44 hours. I never got to go to the birth center. And what I loved is this time it was my call when I got to go to the hospital, my decision, all of it. And Paige was so great about saying hey, this is your labor and we're here to make this happen. And so I just think she's such a unique human. I don't think care like this always looks like this in a hospital, for sure, but it can. And what if we advocated for what we deserve?
Oh, she, just talking to her, I love her. I love her so much. And I one day hope to meet her in person.
She's the greatest human being. And I tell her all the time, you're changing the world. And so many women need you. Actually, their practice is at one point so full of VBAC patients that they've had to unfortunately turn a couple people away because their practice is getting full, which is really amazing though.
Yeah.
And we need that.
It's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So super cool. All right. I think we've got labor coming. Here we go. So I never felt pressure of like, when am I going to go into labor or any of that. Paige was super great about like, hey, like if you're dilated before labor, that's great. If not, whatever, you know, most people dilate while they're in labor. And it was just super helpful. I knew that there was no worry about when I would go into labor. There was no worry about just any of that stuff. So it was really nice to just be at peace. And that's one of the reasons that I actually loved having a hospital provider is because I had a lot of anxiety about transferring from a birth center again. And actually, as I tell my story, I think I would have been a transfer again. And I remember them saying that in my initial consult appointment. Jess, who practices with Paige, said, you know, what's beautiful about hospital care is that we can induce you if you need to be induced. And we have the hospital privileges and you can have the interventions if you need them. And I did, spoiler alert, and it was great. So I got to 40 and one and I started contractions around 11 p.m. on Tuesday night. And I was already just like, felt like it was such a blessing because I finally had contractions that were like normal. I didn't have contractions like that with my son. They started out fast and furious and they were like 7 minutes apart or less my whole 44 hours. And this was like, I felt the wave of a contraction for the first time. And I remember texting my doula, like, this is already so redemptive just that I can like breathe through a contraction. Like, this is nuts. This is so cool. And so there was a couple that I like had to get on all fours in my bed and kind of sway back and forth. And eventually my husband like leaned over and he was like, you need to go to sleep. What are you doing? And I was like, I'm having contractions. And he's like, oh. So it was fun. So I texted my doula and just kind of said like, hey, I think I'm in labor, which is weird for me to say, I think. And again, what's so great is Jessie, my doula, she had been with us in our first birth and she's also a VBAC mom. So she just, it was like, God just had his hands on exactly what we needed and the people that we needed, even from our first birth to carry into our second. So on Wednesday, Jessie also lives in our neighborhood now. So that's fun. So she came over and we went for a walk and we did some homeopathy and she gave me like a great foot and leg massage. And then she said like, okay, hey, let's try to pick things up a little bit. I want you to take a nap with like your knees open. She's like, we don't have a peanut ball. So I grabbed the like triangle pillow from my kid's nugget couch. Works really well, by the way. And so I napped with that between my legs and was able to kind of get things to pick up a little bit. My contractions did get pretty intense, but they were still kind of spread out. So she went home for a little bit and then I kind of took a nap, labored. I went downstairs. We live multi-generationally. So my parents live in our basement in a basement apartment. My niece also lives with us. They have custody of her. And my parents have a way cooler shower than I do because they got to customize their basement. So I went down and took a shower in their shower, which has like, you know, three shower heads and all the stuff. And I was like, this is like being at a birth center. So I hung out in their shower. I took a 2-hour shower. My mom's like, our water bill is going to be insane.
How did you have hot water long enough?
We have that, like, I think, I don't know what it's called, but we have
reverse osmosis thing.
I don't know.
I don't know what we have,
but we have I don't know what it's called. Anyway, that's, but we amazing, do have hot water. And so I was just in there chilling and music on and lights off. And when I could get kind of into the mental space of labor, my contractions would come way closer together and things would intensify. But if I kind of did the like advice of like living life, it was like they just stayed really far apart. So I was like, I know that some of this is prodromal labor a little bit because I'm not getting into consistency unless I'm like
dialed, you know, in,
forcing myself to be there. Mm-hmm. So amongst all of this, my husband is not feeling well. And I'm looking at him like, you seem sick. And my husband never gets sick. And he's like, oh, I'm fine. And I was like, no, I think that you should go get tested for something. Like something in my gut was like, you need to go in. So he went and gets swabbed for the flu and all the things. And he had strep. And so I was like, see, good thing that we got you tested. So he started antibiotics right away. And then that night, my sweet doula came and spent the night because Jared was just not up for being a labor support. And yay for having a doula. because I needed someone to be there physically with me and I needed that support, but he couldn't be there in that moment.
Wow, what an incredible doula. I love hearing that. Yeah.
So she came and spent the night and we did some like side lying release, which from my first labor, I knew I was going to hate it. It's just like the position that to me is just the absolute worst when I'm in labor. It's awful. And my doula was like, hey, so we should do some of that. And I was like, no, we're not. I don't want to. And she's like, I think we should then. And so we did some of that. So we did some of that. And then eventually she kind of like drifted off to sleep. My contractions, again, were still kind of staying spread out. They would get close together and then they'd kind of fizzle.
Yeah.
And so, but they were intense. And that's what's hard is like, you know, you think prodromal labor, at least in my brain, was like, oh, contractions are mild and really far apart. But that's just not how they were for me. They were really intense.
So eventually
I went upstairs and took a bath because I was like, okay, I'm just going to force them to shut down then. Like, I need some rest. So I went and took a bath upstairs, got them to slow down enough that I could sleep for the rest of the night.
Good.
So that was Wednesday. And I, like I said, my labor was long. On Thursday, we woke up. My doula was here with me. We made breakfast and she forced me to eat protein. Yay, doulas. And then I had already a scheduled appointment that week, that day for my 41 week or whatever it was, appointment, 40 weeks, I guess. And so we went into the clinic and kind of my contractions were, I mean, maybe 30 minutes apart at this point. Like, I remember we drove all the way to my clinic is like 20 minutes from my house and we drove all the way there and I didn't have a contraction in the car. And so I was like, ooh, okay. So we went. And I was 4 centimeters dilated and 90% effaced. I asked for the membrane, or not for the, I did ask for a membrane sweep, but I asked for the cervical check. So again, no, not one time ever did I get a check that was like, hey, we should check you now. It was like, hey, I want to be checked now.
Yeah.
Which is so empowering. So 4 centimeters. And she's like, you know what? You're doing it. Like, yes, prodromal labor, sure. But also like your body's making progress. Like you're doing something. Yeah. So,
which is like not prodromal. It's like prodromal pattern and acting that way, but like, but progressing. So like, ooh, like on the cusp.
Yeah, it was weird, but encouraging, you know, to hear that, like, okay, I've done like a day and a half of work. Yeah. But at this point I'm like ticking in my brain, like, okay, how long has this been? Because my first labor was 44 hours and I was 10 centimeters when we transferred to the hospital. And I had told myself my whole pregnancy, like, I can do anything as long as it's less than 44 hours.
Oh,
it was not. It was not. Spoiler alert. So we went home and then my sweet chiropractor actually lives in our neighborhood. So I texted her and was like, hey, I don't know if this is a positional thing. She feels really low and engaged, but can you come adjust me? So she came and brought her table to my house and adjusted me. And she did this thing called an adductor stripping.
Oh.
And so I had done a membrane, an actual membrane sweep with my midwife. And then my chiropractor, she like took her knuckles and went like on my inner thighs and like pushed all down. It hurt so bad.
I'm like doing it to myself barely. And I'm like, ooh.
It was awful. But she was like, this is the like big hip opener thing. So we did that. She even taught my doula how to do it. And I looked at my doula and I said, you're not doing that to me ever again. So glad you learned. You can do it to another client, not me. And so my doula went home again. I got back in a shower, kind of was moving around. And at 4 o'clock, I kind of decided like, okay, I am exhausted. I am ready for a change. I am the type of person that likes to like go somewhere and do something. It's part of why I didn't ever feel like a home birth was the right option for me, because I know that I kind of get stuck in a space. And I like the idea of going somewhere to have my baby felt like a good change. So I was ready, but I wasn't having contractions that were there. And I was like, I also don't want to go to the hospital and be stuck there for a million years. So I decided to go upstairs and like put myself into labor. I'm like, okay, I'm doing this. Turned off all the lights, started to labor. And my mom came up and like gave me a back massage. And it was also cool to see her shift, because my first labor, she was super anxious. And then this labor, she was like really trusting of my process and was more just like, hey, what do you need? So she gave me a really big back massage and I listened to music and I finally got my contractions to 6 minutes apart. And I texted my midwife and I said, if these stay this way for an hour, I want to come because I am exhausted. I'm ready for a change. I need this. And she's like, great. Awesome. Let me know. Keep me posted. So I did have some bloody show and some, I thought maybe my water broke. And so It had been an hour, and I was like, hey, we're going. So my mom had just made dinner, so I'm like scarfing meatloaf on my way out the door. Great last meal.
I love it.
And then we head to the hospital. And I get to the hospital, and I was like 4.5, maybe a 5. So again, earlier that day, I had been a 4. So I had made like a little bit of progress, but not a ton. But Paige was great. And she's like, great, you're here. What I love about their practice is they're direct admittance. And so you don't have to go through triage and like have some sort of evaluation to decide like if you're supposed to be there or not. She was the one that made that call, and we made it in partnership with each other. And I was like, I feel like I need to be here. And she's like, great, you're here.
Yeah.
And so I chose no IV and to do intermittent monitoring, which will come up in my story in a little bit. But that's kind of where I was. And so we started to fill up the tub, and I was laboring in the tub. And then I started to get nauseous and like throwing up and all the things. And in my head, I'm like, I'm in transition. This is very transition-y. And I'm watching as like the baby nurse comes into my room and like starts to set up the bassinet. And I'm starting in my head to tell myself, I'm so close. I'm in transition. Mm-hmm. Like, this is happening. And as I like talk to my doula afterwards, she's like, yeah, we all thought you were in transition too, dude. Like, you were in it. And yeah. So I start to get frustrated and say, like, I want to push. Not that I felt pushy, but I was just like, I want, again, a change. I want
to have a baby and do something different. I want to have a baby.
And so I asked for another check, and I was 6.5 centimeters. And I cursed so much. And I was like, I just want to have my effing baby. And I like screamed that so loud. My poor sweet doula and midwife, they dealt with my sass. And it's like my body knew, like, okay, we're defeated now. Brrr, like everything shut down. Mm-hmm. And my contractions spread apart to like 20 minutes apart again. They had been like 5 minutes. It was like my mental space was not ready. And my body was like, okay, we're going to rest.
Yeah.
And so I get out of the tub and dry off, and we decide that I'll do a little bit of pumping. My midwife puts some clary sage all over my belly, and she does try. I asked to rupture my membranes because we thought maybe they had not ruptured when I thought they did. And she was like, they're definitely intact. She goes, nice protein intake, girly, because these are hard and I can't rupture them. She's like, you have a really strong bag of water. And I said, thanks, needed, for all of the amazing collagen that I took my whole
life. Collagen protein right there.
So I was like, I'm terrible at protein intake. So really, the protein, the collagen from needed was like one of the strongest ways I got protein in during my pregnancy. So pat on my back for my protein intake, and thanks to needed.
Very, very good job. Very impressive. Well, because really, like, strong bag of water, it is hard to get that protein and that the good calcium in. Like, it really is. And so to kind of be to the point where she can't even break it, like, pretty cool. Pretty cool. Good job.
Yeah. So then at this point, it's like kind of later in the evening, like 9 or 10. And so I start to just be exhausted. So I started falling asleep between contractions. My doula is like, hey, we're going to wind down. Let's turn the music just to like instrumental. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go take a nap. Our birth photographer is like napping on the floor. Paige goes and takes a nap, and they tell my husband to like curl up next to me. And that was such a sweet moment of just connection that I needed, of just like, this is my person, and we're here, and we're doing this together. So we kind of snuggled up on the bed and got through contractions together all night long. I did at one point ask to try the nitrous oxide, because in my head, that was the only like pain relief that I could think of that was available to me in this low intervention room. Because the way that the hospital works is if you're not going to have a water birth, like if you decide to get an epidural, they will transfer you out of this room because there's two of them. And at that point, you can't use the tub. So I was like, okay, I think nitrous might be my only option. So I tried that. It sucked. And my midwife, she was like, you know, it's really not helpful for people that are coping with contractions well. And she said the same thing when I started asking about an epidural later on. She was like, you're coping well and you're relaxing. These types of things can be really helpful for people that are like, you know, in the fetal position in between their contractions, but you're not. And so it's probably not actually going to help because you're already relaxed. Mm-hmm. And so all it did was make me feel a little dizzy. And then I was like, well, this is silly. So I got in the shower again there. It was not as good as my parents' shower. So I did get right out of the shower. It was very cold. And so next morning, now it's Friday. So reminder, labor started Wednesday. On Tuesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now we're
Friday morning. And so Paige comes in and we had a really long talk about options. And at this point, I am mad and I'm just feeling like I can't do it. And I keep having contractions and saying, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't do this anymore. And in my head, I'm like, well, at least I'm going to get a VBAC. Hopefully, like, hopefully I can get an epidural and then, like, you know, rest and those stories. And I'm trying to be really open-handed because I think that's what you have to be in birth, is really surrender to the process. And Paige comes up with this idea to do some therapeutic rest, which I had never heard of before. And I think I was texting you during this. And I was like, oh, what is that? She's like, we can give you some morphine. You can either stay here at the hospital or you can go home. And hopefully you'll nap for 4 or 5 hours. And typically people wake up in active labor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sweet, sounds awesome. Give me that nap. And so my doula was like, why don't we go for a walk first? Let's remind ourselves that it's daytime. Let's go on a walk. We'll talk about it together. And then we can come up and do our next steps. So we went out for a walk in the parking lot of the hospital. It was cold and I threw up a couple times. Yay. And I was like, I think I really need this. Like, I can't continue to do this without any progress. She's like, great. I'm excited for you. So we went up and they put an IV in because I didn't have an IV. What was great is the hospital staff was so accommodating. I was really nervous about nurses being like, hey, we don't like this or whatever. Paige was also great about choosing my nurses to be the ones that are going to be more supportive. But, you know, they put an IV in, they gave me the morphine, and then they took it out. Like, I didn't just then have an IV. And so did that. And then we decided we would break my water and try to get things progressing. So she did end up being able to break my water because I could kind of sit still. I was like way more relaxed with the morphine, and it was supposed to be like a 4-hour nap. I woke up like 20 minutes later. We had sent my doula off to like go run errands thinking that we had hours. I wake up like 20 minutes later with really intense contractions that are peeking through the morphine, and they're super close together. And I was like, well, crap, let me call my doula back and get her to come back. And so that really picked things up again. It was kind of discouraging because I was expecting to get to rest. And then to like have intense contractions again was like, oh gosh, okay, here we go. But we did it. And we kind of labored the whole day doing that. But my contractions would never get closer than 5 minutes apart. It was just kind of like they would stall out at that space. And so at like 2:30-ish, I asked about morphine again, because I was like, can we do that again? Like, if that was an option, like, can we try that again? And the nurses were like, hey, we actually think maybe you should just do some IV fentanyl. And my older brother is an addict. And so I am someone who is super cautious. I had actually said it when I got there, like, my preference is no opioids, but this felt like, okay, maybe it's an option. And Paige came in and we talked a little bit and she's like, why don't we do that? And would you be open to doing a low dose of Pitocin? And I was like, absolutely not. Because in my brain, Pitocin means epidural. Pitocin is scary and hard. And yeah. Not doing it. My contractions are already intense. I can't imagine Pitocin, like, absolutely not. And so Paige said, hey, what's cool is you're already in active labor. So Pitocin is not likely going to make your contractions more intense. It will likely bring them closer together. So you can absolutely wait it out, or like, this might be an option, and let's do the pain medicine so that you feel mentally like you can handle it. And I was like, okay. So they placed another IV because I didn't have one in, and they gave me PIT. We did, we started a 2 at 3:30 and then we upped it to a 4 at 4 o'clock. And something that I will mention while I have the IV thought in my brain is I had said I was doing intermittent monitoring and I ended up hating that. I was just irritated by people coming into my space, and it like felt like it interrupted my labor pattern. And, you know, they had to like reach down into the water if I was in the tub, and I was like moving and I felt like I couldn't move or they wouldn't get it. And they were just in my space a lot more. So when we started the Pitocin, the hospital policy was continuous monitoring, but they have the wireless monitors that are waterproof. And they were like, do you feel okay with that? And I said, yeah, I think so. Actually, I think I'm ready for people to stop touching me. Because at one point I looked at a nurse and I was like, I understand why this is important and why you're here to check on my baby. Please go away. Like, I hated it, but I also felt like I wanted some sort of monitoring. So
I can see that though.
Yeah, it was just like disruptive, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because in my brain, I thought that the continuous monitoring would feel disruptive, but it was great. because they just put these little two little dots on me. I had a belly band that went over. They were wireless. I could still move all around. It was
That's nice.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm like hooked up to Pitt on the little IV pole, but I can still go wherever I want. So I decided to go labor in the bathroom. And this is the part of my labor that gets a little fuzzy. And I was really thankful to have had a conversation with my acupuncturist prior to labor, because she had a great labor experience, but she was actually a home birth hospital transfer too. And she had talked about how, you know, I had said, I don't want to do medication because I want to be really present. There's so much of my son's birth that I don't remember because of the medication. And she had told me, like, hey, there is a place sometimes in labor land that your body just kind of naturally goes fuzzy. And so don't be taken aback if that's your experience. And so that was really helpful to know that, like, in this transition time, things feel a little fuzzy, but I'm at peace with that versus my son's birth, where it felt like invasive to like not have those memories.
Yeah.
So we were laboring in the bathroom. And then I remember at one point kind of yelling for Paige, because my doula is in there with me. And I was like, I'm feeling pushy and like ring of fiery. And she's like, okay. So we kind of came out of the bathroom. They unhooked me from the Pitocin. They did keep the hep block in. And again, they were really respectful and asked, like, hey, since we've already been doing Pit, we've already put two in. Do you mind if we keep the hep block? And we'll wrap you up. You can do whatever you want. And I was like, that's fine. It's already there. Let's not bruise up my arm anymore. So we came out and I was laboring on all fours. I had gotten sick of the tub and I had actually said, I don't want to be in the tub anymore at some point during the day, because I was like, this thing that was so great and it is helpful, but every time I get in, I get discouraged because my contractions pick up, but then like, it seems like I have to get out. And so my doula is looking at me and she's like, hey, are you sure you don't want to get in the tub? Like, this was your goal. This was your goal. Are you sure? And I'm laboring on all fours and I'm feeling pushy. And she's like, we can fill up the tub so fast. Like, do you want us to just fill it up? Like, this was your goal. Are you sure? And I was like, okay, yeah, fill up the tub. And then the one other thing that I think was funny is I was wearing a really ugly bra because I had had two black bras that I really wanted to wear and they had gotten wet over 2 days of being at the hospital. And I didn't have it on. And I kind of like looked at her and I was like, I'm wearing my ugly bra. And she was like, change. So my birth photographer like ran over and grabbed my black bra that I wanted to have on. And I like changed really fast, which was really funny. And then hopped in the tub and started to just labor there. My doula and midwife kind of coached me to like wait for fetal ejection reflex. So they're like, if you can just breathe through these contractions, let's wait and see if your body just kind of starts to push. And I was like, okay, I guess we'll be here. And I was in this like really deep low squat. I have like 20 years of dance in my history, teach bar, and on one tippy toe. And Paige told me after, she's like, I have never almost broken a mirror trying to get so low to see what was going on because you were in such a low squat. And I did deliver my daughter on my tippy toes. So it was like, if I put my heel down, it hurt more. And I don't know why, but my tippy toes felt great. So
interesting. Like point. Like
standing on my tippy toes.
Like up here. Oh my gosh.
So I had like, it was like in a lunge with like one leg up on a tippy toe. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I was kind of laboring there and these contractions felt different, which again is so cool to have gotten to experience. At this point, fentanyl wears off after 30 minutes. And so I really feel like it was perfect because I got it for the hard Pitocin part, which actually wasn't bad at all, by the way. It was exactly what Paige said. It just brought them closer together. They didn't hurt anymore.
Increase. Yeah.
It was awesome. So highly recommend if you need it at the end to know that it probably won't increase intensity. It just can help. And so I was fully unmedicated at this point. And so I would feel the like beginning of my contraction I could breathe through. And then when that fetal ejection reflex hits, man, it is crazy. I had heard someone describe it as the feeling of like when you have to throw up and you just can't stop. And that is exactly what it feels like. It's now I'm pushing. And so my body just did it by itself. And I didn't have to worry about like, okay, how do I breathe and how do I do? And there was no counting. And so I pushed for 52 minutes on my tippy toes. And it was so cool. And my husband really wanted to catch her. And so he was right there and he'll joke forever that I bruised his hand in labor because I was death gripping.
He's in it.
And yeah, I remember feeling Ring of Fire and all of the things. And then she just came out and her whole body came out with her head. And it just felt like the biggest relief in the world of like, ooh. And then I grabbed her. So Jared's like, you kind of stole my thunder. Like, I was just so excited. So both of us kind of had our hands on her and got to bring her up to my chest. And what we realized is I had a really short cord. And so the theory is that so much of my labor was probably held back because she didn't have a lot of like bungee room to descend. And so it kind of explained a couple of things. So yeah, so she was on my chest in the tub and kind of hanging out. And then we got off and got to the bed and she was hanging out on my chest. And then as the cord stopped pulsing, she forgot to breathe.
Oh.
And so they had to cut the cord really quickly, take her off my chest and take her over to the warmer. And she was fine. They called in the neonatalist and all the things. And she did eventually just kind of come back to me after I had delivered the placenta. But that was like the only like scary moment. And the theory is that like she was still relying on the cord and then it stopped pulsing and she was like, oh, shoot, I need to breathe now. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. I got to see my placenta and I did have a marginal cord, which we knew, which is when your cord is kind of off to the side of your placenta. And again, we knew that my whole pregnancy and it was never a like, this is going to prevent you from having a VBAC conversation. Right. But yeah, we got to do the thing and catch a baby. And it was just the coolest thing ever. And yet I can look back and say, gosh, yeah, I probably would have been a transfer because of how long my labor was. I'm so thankful that I took the interventions when I needed them and that I had a provider who I trusted was in my corner. Never once did I think like, oh, she's recommending this so that it goes faster or, oh, she's, you know, bothered or anything. And Paige actually had kind of specialed me in that she wasn't on call that night, but she came in for me, which was really special. And I don't know. I never expected that I would have a hospital birth. I never expected that I would have Pitocin or pain medication or any of the things, and yet feel so at peace with how it played out. And it was absolutely beautiful and absolutely physiological in all of the ways that it needed to be. So that was her birth.
Oh my goodness. I'm so happy for you. I can just close my eyes and I can see your picture. Like, oh, so many feels and such a long journey, like such a long journey for you to keep shifting gears, but you know, going back into your team and all the relationships that you established working up to this, well, these days, but this moment, you had all of those people come into your labor too at some point. And like, whether it was mentally thinking about something that they had said, or they physically came down the street and were able to serve you and touch you and adjust you and work with you that way. Or, you know, there's so many things along the way that it's like, wow, like you should be so proud of yourself for building that team, for getting the education, for having this big different experience, for trusting your instincts. Like, I do think in the VBAC world, in all birth world, but for VBAC world, we do sometimes get into this like, oh, Pitocin can be bad, epidurals can be bad, hospitals can be bad, this can be bad, you know, all of these things. And a lot of the times it's based off of negative experiences that one has had.
But or stories that you or hear. Or
stories that we hear. Yes. Because, I mean, how many stories have we heard about the cascade? We've heard absolutely so many. But like you said, like these things needed to come into your labor at what, you know, at the points that they did, and they served you well. And when you said, you know, you didn't expect to have these experiences and then find them healing and positive. But I truly believe when we are making the decisions in our birth experience, when we have our birth team that we trust and know are there for us, and in our corner, like Paige is and was, it's very different.
It makes a world of difference.
It's very different. I mean, I have had clients where I've had providers like actually say with their words, I like to manage my labors, right? I like to manage my labors. So if we hear that and then we hear the experience, it's like, You guys don't do those things, you know, because they led down a negative path. But those are so different. And so we need to remind ourselves as we're listening to stories about Pitocin and epidurals or hospitals, like have a soft part in your heart for them, because you never know, they may be something that you need or want in your labor. And if we can have the education about those things and then make the choice that feels right for us in our labor, I mean, here you are saying these things. You're saying these words. I had these experiences. I experienced Pitocin. I experienced fentanyl that I didn't know I want, right? I had all these things and it was great.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And Paige was like, I've never seen someone dilate to a 7 with such an irregular contraction pattern.
Yes. And
love is a couple days before I went into labor. Someone had posted this quote and we posted it just recently to our page, but it was from the Matrescence podcast. And it says, for every birth video that you watch where a woman calmly breathes her baby into the world, make sure you watch one where she begs, pleads, roars, swears, doubts, and works incredibly hard to meet her baby. I know, I cried.
That just gave me the chills.
So yes. If that is your experience, you are not caught off guard by the intensity of birth. And I had seen that before I went into labor. Someone posted it in the VBAC Link community on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly my experience. I screamed and I begged and I roared. Oh my God, there was no quiet breathing during my pushing. Like my throat was sore the next day, so much so that I had them swab me for strep because my husband had strep. Yeah, and I was like, can I get strep? But my throat was just like raw from screaming. Not screaming. I would call it roaring because roaring. It was not, I wasn't high-pitched screaming. It was just like the natural primal thing.
Guttural roar.
Okay. Doesn't make it less than. It was pretty dang cool. So that was all the things. And then in this postpartum experience, it's been so great. Paige is awesome. We've been, kind of chatting over the phone and we had a 2-week postpartum visit. And then I just have the best community. I feel like a deep sense of gratitude for the community that I have this time compared to my first. Mm-hmm. Sweet friends that literally right before I came on were like, hey, update. Like, how are you? What's going on? How's Tilly? What do you need? And so I think that community has made a huge difference too. And also I feel like I could run a marathon because I didn't have a C-section, you know?
Yeah. Your recovery, your recovery is feeling a lot better.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And I was super active prior to having her. So I think that helps too, you know?
Yeah.
Just feeling that strength is there. Absolutely. And resilient. So.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love you. I'm so happy for you. Seriously. I can't wait to even go back and re-listen to this once it airs. You're incredible. You're such a ray of sunshine. And truly, it is an honor to have you here on our VBAC Link team. And then to be part of this story. And you had said before, like, you haven't really even like shared it in this entirety. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel tickled that I get to be one of the first to hear it in its entirety.
Well, thank you, friend. It's an honor to be on the team, to get to hold space for everyone else's stories. And I have a squeaky baby. But it is just, it's a joy and a dream to get to be here. So thanks for holding space for all of us who have needed it for years. We love you.
Well, I love you back and thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.